Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. This is your host, Greg Blaze, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network. Today's episode is our final installment of the Old School, New School series. Over the past few weeks, I've talked with cheesemakers of different generations, Franklin Peluso, Judy Shad, and David Major, representing some of the pioneers of artisan cheesemaking in the U.S. We've spoken with Jost Volto, Michael Lee, and Veronica Pedraza, all cheesemakers who have somewhat recently started making cheese. With the Cheesemonger Invitational coming up, and happening this weekend in Long Island City, I thought it'd be great to talk to a couple of cheesemongers, old and new school, both of whom are involved in the Invitational this year. First, I'd like to introduce my old schooler. He is definitely old school, sometimes referred to as the Jack LaLanne of cheesemongers. You should see this guy. He's got some VHS workout tapes that are absolutely incredible. I believe he served as Lyndon Baines Johnson's private dancer at one point. Matt Rubiner, owner and cheese operator of Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers in Great Barrington, Mass. Thanks for coming on, Matt.
Hey, Greg.
Hey there. And our new schooler is Emily Acosta, who is a cheesemonger currently at Eataly. I forgot to mention, Matt is a judge in the Cheesemongers competition this year, as they will no longer allow him to compete.
Nonsense.
But Emily is a cheesemaker, a cheesemonger at Eataly. She will be competing this year. Emily is the new school cheesemonger, coming to us from that culinary hotbed of J.P. Morgan Chase, and she's been a cheesemonger for about 2.5 or 3 years. Welcome, Emily. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Glad to have both of you. So I asked each of our cheesemakers last week and then in the weeks prior why they make the particular cheeses they make, cow, goat, and sheep. And to both of you, I ask, why cheese and why cheesemongering? Matt, maybe you can tell us how you became a cheesemonger and why cheese for you?
Well, I mean, I went into cheese sort of late in life, and it was probably an irritatingly calculated move. You know, I was doing other stuff, decided for a change, thought the food business might be challenging, I was kind of in academia, so I thought I would do something that allowed me to bring the same sort of lifelong inquiry into a subject. And I thought wine, but the wine trade in the early stages just seemed kind of salesman-y to me, and this was 23 years ago. Cheese seemed like something that I could, study to my deathbed and still not know a damn thing about it when I was done. And so I just quit my job, or it's more complex than that, but I was more cowardly than that. I didn't actually
quit. Where were you working?
I was working at MIT, and I was being funded by a grant. So I quit my job, meaning I didn't renew my grant, which was expiring in 6 months. And then I took a job there was an arranged marriage with Formaggio Kitchen, and I took a job there for, $6. And
$6 an hour?
A week.
$6
a week.
That's
all I could afford.
So you were one of the more well-paid employees at Formaggio at that time. So what year was that? When did you start when were you a cheesemonger first?
That was almost 20 years ago today, so 1994, at the Fancy Food Show was my first day of work.
And so you're 21 years in.
21 years.
That's great. So you made the transition, obviously, from being a cheesemonger, but you're still a cheesemonger. I mean, you just competed.
Oh, yeah, very
much. You were the winner of the first cheesemonger
invitational. Yeah, but there were like 9 guys.
Yeah. Still, it's tough to be first, Matt. It's tough to be first. But that speaks to what we were talking about, what I wanted to talk about anyway, with old school versus new school. Would you agree that when you started to do this 20 years ago or so, that the culture of the industry, the culture of being a cheesemonger, was a little bit different than it is now?
It was completely different. I mean, I don't think there was a culture of being a cheesemonger in the same way there is now. The state of the art of the industry, as you recall, was pretty low. I mean, the cheeses that we really prized back then are nothing you can't get in a halfway decent supermarket. I'm not talking, you know, Whole Foods or Wegmans. I'm talking Price Chopper. And that's what our local supermarkets are called up in the Berkshires.
Up there?
Yeah.
Up in the sticks?
But, you know, the case was filled with, you know, I mean, I don't mean to disparage some of these cheesemakers, but, you know, they were Pave Dauphinois or Huntsman or, you know, our English cheese was Huntsman. Our Spanish cheese was some nonsense Manchego. There was nothing, or very, very little, from the United States of note. There was Telemay.
Sure.
There was the Vella Dry Jack, a few other things. You know, even like old school, you know, the grand dame of, you know, farmstead American cheese making, you know, what used to be called Vermont Shepherd. I don't know what it's called now.
But Verano.
That didn't even exist yet. I remember the first prototypes. It was different, and there wasn't, you know, the state of the art in the way that things were purchased, the way and sourced and handled. And, you know, to even speak of a cheesemonger culture was just not something.
Now, you were definitely a foundation stone of that and helped to lay down that, well, you know, I mean, they keep all the ugliest stones down at the bottom,
there,
you know. What about you, Emily? How did you become a cheesemonger?
So as you said, I came from a finance background. I straight out of college, I went to business school, and I started working in finance. And you know, even though parts of it were appealing to me,
like that, what?
Like, you know, the analytical aspects of
the
it.
Paychecks,
and,
the
and
large
the paychecks,
paychecks.
Especially being a cheesemonger for a few years now, I kind of miss that. I didn't feel a connection to what I was doing, and I've always been very passionate about food and knowing where my food comes from. And in 2009, I decided to quit my job and start the Food Studies Master's Program at NYU.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and I remember around that same time, just keeping up on, you know, all kinds of literature that was coming out at that time, I read this article in The Atlantic by Daphne Zeppos, which was all about cheesemongering. And I was like, cheesemongering? That is the coolest sounding job I've ever heard.
She mentioned me.
You were not mentioned. But it did say, I remember at the end it said something like, the great thing about this job is that, or rather, that your job and your ideals kind of match. And that just kind of connected with me. And I started taking all kinds of cheese classes at Whole Foods, and I did eventually in 2010 the internship, the cave internship
at Murray's.
Yeah. And I just became fascinated with the culture and the history around cheese, the science, just eventually decided that that's the path that I had to take. The same thing as Matt mentioned. It's just like the more you learn, the more you realize how little you know and how you'll never really know the topic fully. There's just always something to learn.
Oh, fantastic. I absolutely agree with that. I mean, definitely for you, you said you came in 2009. You had friends that were not imaginary friends like the friends that Matt and I had, I imagine, when we started. I mean, I still have a lot of imaginary friends, but I mean, you must have gotten a lot of your, I know you as a man of academia and, you know, a smarty pants of sorts.
What are you trying to say?
Were you also interested in the culture and the epistemological, surroundings of cheese? Was that something you got into?
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that I know what that means, absolutely. when I went into it, you know, I went into it. We didn't have no NYU, you know, food studies school or cheese cave internships and stuff. So I like made flashcards from like books, which I got busted on for my first day of work. I was thrown in the back of Isan, you know, the owner of Formaggio's Volvo.
Yeah.
And with pockets full of flashcards that I've been studying for weeks, and they've spilled out in the car, you know. Been getting shit for that ever since. But you know, where I drew on the back a picture of the no. They're just, you know, I drew on the back a little picture of the cheese and the name, and then on the other side, you know, which, you know, Department of France it came from,
sure,
and a milk, and you know, studied it, but the reason the whole business, and you know, wine as well, attracted me because you could bring all these. You could look at it in such a wonderfully multidisciplinary way. You know, my field of study before was military history, and even that, you know, you can kind of look at the history of conquest and its effect on cheese making.
Absolutely.
You know, and so that's what drew me into it. You know, the science, I'm not a scientist, and the science still escapes me. And
me
I read
too.
Textbooks, and I don't know what the hell they're talking about. And you think I should have known that 20 years ago.
Well, I agree. Like, and then, you know, working with Emily at the cheese counter at Eataly, I'm consistently embarrassed at myself because I botch up the steps in the cheese making processes all the time. And Emily, I feel like that's one thing that really drew you in. I've worked with you, so I know you are of a meticulous nature. You like numbers and processes.
I do. I think that's why I went into finance. But no, I mean, definitely, it's sort of the same reason why I started teaching cheese making, because I was just fascinated by this process of liquid milk turning into something that you can keep for an extended period of time. It's just a whole fascinating process. And watching the rinds grow on bloomy rinds, and you know, seeing Geotrichum form that beautiful brainy shape, it's just magical.
See, I think that's also the difference. I mean, I know when I started, I had to make my own cheese cave, and it was like a cardboard box with a piece of plastic on the top. I think I
remember your cheese cave.
I had constructed an elaborate and a highly illegal setup in like a walk-in in Dean and DeLuca.
Think we had, at least we built it. By we, I mean Formaggio Kitchen. We built ours as the first cheese cave in America. Nobody ever challenged us on it, so we'll maintain that. But it was it was in the basement. It was the accountant's office. And literally it was like, okay, get out of the office. We're turning it into a cheese cave.
Wasn't that a bunch of overturned like buckets with like an aquarium?
No, you know, there was – well, yeah, the science of humidification isn't quite where it is right now, although I've been in some very sophisticated cheese caves that use those magic foggers that make your pond look like, you know, you threw dry ice in it, and witch's brew. Isan got this idea of I think the Neil's Yard guys taught him this, but it was this pagoda of plastic flower pots and plastic plates with holes, and then a pump at the bottom and a pool of water, and it came up and cascaded down. And we used it for like 3 days, and then we realized the cheese in such a small room was getting it up to nearly 100% humidity and we just, you know, if anything, we were trying to get it out of there, so we mothballed that thing. But
did Murray's have a slightly better setup than that, Emily?
Slightly better, yeah. They did.
I mean, I also...
whatever.
I played around in the caves as well. It's interesting, and I was going to ask you, Emily, do you see a definitive line? Now, when I asked the cheesemakers about this, about if there was a dividing line between the old school and new school cheesemakers, and they were very together. You know, they were very much reliant on one another, and the people who were making cheese somewhat in a new fashion were really interested in learning from the other older cheesemakers. Do you find that that's the same with cheesemongers, or is the culture a little bit different? Is there a dividing line?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, so I'm a career changer. I chose cheesemongering as my career path. And I know, you know, I'm friends with lots of people, former lawyers and, you know, former other things that have given up their more lucrative jobs to do something that they're passionate about. And then there are the people who are just, I mean, passing by, because there's a certain, at least the way I perceive it, the certain sexiness around cheesemongering, and especially when you consider, you know, events like the Cheesemonger Invitational and all this hype around the cheesemonger as rock star.
Well, you were taking it a little bit by that sexiness. Daphne put her spell on you by writing that article for The Atlantic, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain kind of, I don't know, it's just an interesting career path to take, but you know, for those of us who are not passing by and who want to work in cheese for the rest of our lives, definitely looking to people who've worked in cheese, it's really important to find mentorship. Like, you, Greg, you're definitely one of my mentors. And
that's frightening for you.
And Raymond Hook, who I've worked with, yeah. Also, he's super old school.
We're going to get him in here.
Yeah, we are.
I like it.
What about you, man? Do you think that there are a lot of tourists in the new school? Or what do you think about that? I mean, you employ people.
I mean, there's definitely, there's a lot of people who are, who are just like they always were. You know, some kid from the neighborhood, somebody who's, like you said, just passing through, somebody who's might make this career, might be co-opted, but, they're kind of passing through. But there's definitely a, I don't quite know the right words to use. I'm sitting here in a shipping container at Roberta's and
you sure are.
Or wherever we are. And, I don't want to be savaged by the locals, but there's the same component to cheesemongers as one has seen for some time in, the new breed of, as it were, of hip butchers. And, when you go to the Cheesemonger Invitational and you see the sound like an old man, but you see the enthusiasm of the kids. I mean, you see
those youngsters.
I mean, nobody in my day had cheese tattoos.
Oh,
up
in
and
your
down
day,
their arm.
Yeah, mine either.
I'm
still tattoo free.
Yeah, so well, it's the extent to which people split off from whatever gainful employment they were doing or had intended into cheesemongering as a career. And go at it with the enthusiasm and the energy that they do is something that was pretty rare when you and I were around, I think.
Well,
it's a bigger industry now. There are more places.
There's the sense of community, and one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you guys about this was, I think it was foreign to me in the beginning. I was like, I don't know who does this sort of thing except for people who are 25 years older than me, and they're kind of like, what the hell are you doing this for, and now there's a large community of people who are the same age, and I don't find it good or bad, but I do find it interesting,
yeah.
I mean, Emily, you're definitely a part of that. You see all types, right?
Yeah, well, I also feel like the new school doesn't necessarily mean young. It just means people who are entering this industry fairly recently.
Are we establishing here that there actually is an old and a new school?
Well, if there is an old and new school, Greg and I were talking about this, I guess you guys are like mid-schoolers, because they're definitely even older school.
Well, who's the oldest of the old school?
The oldest of the old school would be, I don't know, you should answer that. Who are your mentors?
Well, my mentors, and honestly, my mentors in the industry weren't people that were in the industry. They were the people who gave me my employ and allowed for me to explore. And I think that that's the difference a lot. Now, there are schools that can teach you how to become a cheesemonger, that can teach you how to age cheese and sell cheese. I didn't have that. I don't know if you did. I mean, you had a great – Formaggio was like an institution of cheesemongering.
Formaggio is an institution, but it was just kind of the right time, because when we started Formaggio, it was a cutting edge cheese shop, but that edge wasn't particularly interesting, and then as the industry developed, as people traveled, there's all kinds of reasons one can surmise, people traveled, it was a wealthy time, it's a
prosperous, yes,
that the sort of the foodie hip, the health food hippie types and the foodie connoisseur types came together, sort of as one and seeking out these things.
Sure.
And the level of not just knowledge, but real connoisseurship of the general public, And then, some things happen in the industry. Some things change in the industry about that time in terms of, importing cheese shops, importing cheeses themselves. There was a golden era there, which unfortunately is not anymore, but there was
no.
A golden era of just bringing in whatever the hell you wanted. And then the industry changed, and then American cheese making really started to happen in a way that it wasn't before. So you guys, the new school, they can do these field trips to farms. They can know these cheesemakers. They can see it done. That really wasn't something we could do. We're not going to go off and see President Brie made. And,
no. No, we aren't. Although you can now.
How they jam the Stilton in between the Cheshire and the Hudson.
Torture devices out there.
I would say the new school, this new class of cheesemongers that's come in has really come in because of the increase in American artisan cheesemaking. Because you need people to be, as that industry has increased. As we talked to, as you talked to the cheesemakers in the prior episodes in the series, as more cheesemakers have emerged, you need more people to sell that cheese.
Yeah, you sure do. So, look, we're going to have to take a short break, but we'll come right back with Matt Rubiner and Emily Acosta. Thanks for hanging out.
Do-it-yourselfer, ever thought about gardening? If you can build that window box, you can build a raised bed in your backyard. Bonnie veggie and herb plants in raised beds make a fast weekend project with a big payback. Fresh, grow-em-yourself tomatoes and peppers, kale, basil and thyme, and so much more. Bonnie plants are healthy and strong and help jumpstart your garden. So get growing. Plans and how-tos at bonnieplants.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. Before the break, I was talking with Matt Rubiner of Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Emily Acosta of Eataly here in New York City about their roots in cheesemongery and the path they took to be sitting here with me in this booth made out of shipping containers and Roberta's Pizza. In this next portion of the show, I want to talk to you guys about the future and the sustainability of a career in cheesemongering. Just as I asked the cheesemakers in the prior installments of the series, my question to you both is, what are the challenges you face as cheesemongers? Emily, what do you think? How sustainable is this life for you?
So being a cheesemonger, sustainability, it's difficult, because it's not a very lucrative job, as we've talked about, to be able to sustain over a long period of time. So I know, you know, you reach, and also it gets boring after a while. You know, you're like,
what?
I should.
How dare you?
No. I mean, you, when you're just at the counter all the time and assisting customers all the time and not necessarily, and well, I guess it also depends on the type of customer you have. It could just get very repetitive and tedious. When you have sort of other things that you're dealing with, like I personally don't do any buying or, I do teach the classes at Eataly, which is a lot of fun. But I feel like to have a career in cheesemongering, you have to supplement it with something else or own your own shop or, kind of move into a role that isn't being at the counter every single moment of the day.
But do you ever think, as a cheesemonger, I think you can never get away from that. I mean, the term cheesemonger, you know.
No, absolutely. And I love being at the counter, as you know. I love serving people, and I love meeting new people. And most of all, I love teaching people about the cheese and explaining to them why they should be eating these great products that we carry. But, you know, 5 days a week for an extended period of time, it can get a little tedious.
Wait, don't you work for him?
I do.
She used to work for me. No, but seriously, the money's still there. I think that for enough cash, you would do that. I mean, if you owned your own shop.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I mean, do you agree with that, Matt? I mean, do you ever get tired of people at the counter after 20 plus years of waiting on them?
Yeah, I prefer not to comment on that. But it's, you know, it's. I mean, to answer your question about sustainability,
yeah.
I don't think it's, you know, materially different than, you know, the deciding to go to cooking school or you know, learning about wine. Or it is. From my view, it's a young person's. You know, I mean, it's service industry job, and you know, it is very much like a trade, and it you know, whether you call it that or not, you do start out really kind of as an apprentice.
Completely.
And you move on from there, and you try to have masters to learn from, but yeah, I mean, I'm an owner now. I mean, I love it. You know, there's not a day goes by that I don't wonder why the hell I ever did this, but there's also not a day goes by that I don't say I know exactly why I did this, you know. And it's something that, you know, either by the, you know, just the, you know, we're a little store in the hills, so I don't really have the option of not working the floor. But I just can't see a time when, I don't know that answers the question, but I can't see a time not working the floor.
Exactly.
You know, I just can't imagine not.
Well, that's, to me, what you said, Emily, is poignant, because you mentioned before that people are taken in by this romantic notion of what being a cheesemonger is, and it's straight retail job. You know, you're pushing food out to people. That's the nuts and bolts of it. But I think for me, what separates it is the products. You know, the cheese itself is the sexy part about it. I mean, we are decidedly, you know, just mucking through, pushing out that awesome stuff to people.
It's especially at a place like Eataly where we are so volume based. We have, you know, so many people walk through there. If you've ever been there on a Saturday, you know what I mean. That's just like impossible to walk through. It's just that repetitive kind of nature. You don't have the time necessarily to develop relationships with every customer that comes in. And a lot of people are coming in as, you know, from other places, and they don't know that we are all behind the counter very experienced and very knowledgeable and can sort of guide them through our massive collection of cheese. And they're just like, give me a quarter pound of prosciutto. You know, my favorite was I got asked for the Parmesan with the sand in it.
Oh, the sand.
You got the Parm
Matt,
with
you
the
carry
sand
that?
In it.
Oh, yeah.
You carry the Parm with the sand
it?
In it?
So.
Yeah, customers are the best. They are. Let's say that. For me, it just comes down to money, unfortunately. I mean, because for myself, I got into it early. People seem to think that longevity equates that I know what I'm doing, which is, you know, they keep giving me bigger paychecks, which means I almost, you know, have a livable wage at this point. But do you ever think that the amount of cheesemongers that we have now in comparison to that time and the amount of cheese shops in general force the wages of cheesemongers down? Or can there ever be too many cheese shops?
It can't be too many good ones. I mean, it's hard to have a good cheese shop.
Why?
Because it really takes a dedication. It really takes, you know, I try to use the word passion as little as possible, but it really takes a passion. It really takes a willingness to learn this. It really takes a desire to really truly be in this career, learn every aspect of it. And it's you know, the products that we're handling, you know, they're very difficult. First of all, you've got to have taste, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to know where to find this stuff. You got to know how to you know, something as mundane as check it in, you know, make sure nothing's going through your, you know, first line of defense. And then you got to know how to handle it. And then you got to know how to tell the story. And it's hard, you know, and it, you know, there's some places that are just, you know, sort of too big to be good. You know, there are places that are, you know, imagine themselves to be good. And, you know, look, I'll say it, you know, sometimes they don't have the level of taste that you'd want or the collection that might seem, you know, interesting. It, you know, it's not, there's only going to be so many really at the forefront. And so I don't know about wage pressures and things like that, but I think there's always going to be a place like that. Just like there's always a place for a great restaurant and there's always a place for, you know, a little diner.
So as the amount of cheesemongers has increased, has the quality of cheesemongers increased?
God, I think absolutely, yeah. I mean, you didn't meet young, career-oriented cheesemongers in the early 90s that much. You
know, no.
Mid-90s or whatever. You just didn't do it. There were people who worked in the shop, and some people stuck with it. Some people, you, me, nice guy Vinny Maniacci.
Yeah, Vinny Maniacci.
You know, these are people who were like,
nice guy Vinny.
This is what I want to do. I'm going to do this. And most people who I worked with back in Formaggio are not in the cheese business anymore.
No.
But there's a hell of a lot more of them now, but there's, like, you know, I was saying before, there's just a level of energy. You know, the fact that we use the word cheesemonger, the fact that people refer to themselves as a cheesemonger, you know, just says it all. That wasn't the case. Oh, I work in a cheese shop, you know.
I actually have a question for both of you, and that's going off of what you just said. I remember when I first started in cheesemongering, I was working at Beecher's Handmade Cheese. That was my first cheesemongering job. And I don't remember who I was having this conversation with, but there's a certain protectiveness around the term cheesemonger. Or it was sort of like, people who are working in this business for 2 days call themselves a cheesemonger, and they haven't earned sort of the right to call themselves that yet. There are certain, you know, thresholds you have to pass before you can call yourself that. How do you guys feel about that?
I mean, I don't care. As long as you show up to work on time and do what I ask you to do, you can call yourself whatever you want.
But you got to bristle a little bit sometimes. It is a trait. You know, there are arcane practices and arcane tools and a great body of knowledge that needs to be mastered, or at least, you know, you need to be set on the path of mastering this great and changing and really truly vast body of knowledge. And you know, you bristle a little bit when somebody just one day opens a cheese shop with no, you know, experience.
Right.
And you go in there and it shows. There's no way they're going to fake it. You know, they might hire a few people who know what they're doing. But I really do. Like, I called my store Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers. That was before Anne called hers Saxby's Cheesemongers.
If you're listening, Anne.
I did it specifically with my name and cheesemongers because it was me, it was my palate, it was the things that I love, it was the story I'm going to tell, and then we're cheesemongers, and you know, we picked the old name for, you know, our trade, and because we really do see it as, you know, a trade. You know, the stakes aren't as high as, say, you know, an electrician or something if you one day decide to be a, you know, an electrician and failed to be trained, but it's something that I think it's something that requires that kind of dedication. You know, sometimes people call themselves a cheesemonger, but you know, if you go work in a shop that's a good shop and you get behind the counter and you put on an apron, you're a cheesemonger. You might be an apprentice cheesemonger, but
you're there.
A cheesemonger.
And I guess that I agree with that. I mean, I was joking before. I don't have a problem with it per se, because I know I'm a cheesemonger, so it doesn't, I don't know, I'm secure in the fact that I know I am. I don't know if I'm a good one or not, but I know it's what I am. And I know that the people that work for me are the same. Achoo!
Oh. Bless you.
Sorry, got a little dusty in here. But what about you? Do you feel that you have earned the right to call yourself a cheesemonger?
Oh gosh, I don't know, have I? No, I.
Well, we'll find out at the end of the week, right?
I guess we will at the cheesemonger invitational. We will. Yeah, I mean, I refer to myself as a cheesemonger when I have to tell people my profession is.
But what makes you think? So Matt said, you know what, you know why he called his store what he called it, and why he calls himself that. Why really do you feel like you can refer to yourself as a cheesemonger?
It definitely is there's a craft to it. It's learning how to take care of cheese and learning how to tell the story to customers and doing it effectively and moving the cheese that you need to move. There is an art or, you know, a craft to it. And, you know, over the last however many years, couple years, 3 years, I've been doing this.
Yeah.
I've been able to learn that. Have I mastered it? No, but I don't.
Well, for me, when I knew it was a cheesemonger, when I was working in Boston at Savonarz Market, and I had the keys to the place.
That's where I used to buy all my snake meat.
Yeah. They sell the best snake meat at Savonarz. And I'm not even kidding you. And llama, if you want that sort of thing. But I was working there at about 2:30 in the morning because I would go in after the butchers were done, and I would just cut the little case. I was had no nowhere near the kind of inventory that they had at Formaggio. But when I walked out of there at 2, and the Boston subways were shut down, and I smelled really badly, and I had to walk back to Alston, and I was tired, but I was like really happy, and I had a little piece of like camembert or something in my pocket. I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my, you know, the rest of my time. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that was my particular training, but that's when I knew that I was going to do it. So I'll ask you guys, we got to wrap this up, unfortunately, but So, Matt, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're not going to sell the shop and become an auto mechanic anytime in the near future.
No, I'm in so deep. What else am I going to do with my life?
So you're a lifer. And,
absolutely.
You hope to that Reuben Hoos Cheesemongers just sustains itself forever, right?
Yeah, I hope we continue to grow and do well, and we love where we are, and it's kind of ideal country living for us. And
oh, you're in a beautiful spot. Mm-hmm. And you have a family. You have little ones, correct?
No, I have a couple of rather large dogs. And a wife.
Are they going to be able to take it over for you?
Probably not.
Well, you better get working on that.
Yeah, they couldn't make any less money doing it than I did.
Oh, that's a topic for another day. And what about you, Miss Emily Acosta? You're going to be a cheesemonger with us for a long time?
Well, for now, I'm a part-time cheesemonger with you for a long time. Like I said, I have got my master's in food studies. I have to pay back the student loans, and the cheesemongering isn't cutting it for the paycheck I'm getting.
For the coin purse.
Exactly. So I'm working on building Eataly's e-commerce program and stopping into the shop to help you whenever I can.
Right on. Well, I wanted to say thanks to both of you for coming on, to Matt Rubiner and Emily Acosta, and thanks to you guys for listening to this entire series of Old School versus New School. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd live on the Heritage Radio Network. Peace.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.